football on Off the Ball.
There is an unpredictability about it. I mean, if there was a predictability about it, we'd all be drinking caipirinhas and daiquiris, as Pep suggested, but on Copacabana Beach, having just sort of taken the bookies to the cleaners.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Gaelic football on Off the Ball.
In partnership with AIB. Proud supporters of the AIB All-Ireland Club Championships. Because we believe support is what gets you the life you're truly after.
Now another busy weekend of Gaelic football action comes into view. So all of Division 1 playing out at on Sunday afternoon. So at 1:15pm on Sunday afternoon, you've got Kerry against Monaghan, Mayo against Armagh, Donegal against Galway. And then Roscommon take on Dublin at 2pm on Sunday. In Division 2, just to run through some of their fixtures. So three fixtures tomorrow evening. You've got Cavan versus Louth at Breffni Park at 5:15. Drone against Offaly at 6pm. And then Kildare taking on Meath and Newbridge at 7pm. Things heating up nicely in that division. Cork, who are flying, go to Derry at 1pm on Sunday. We've also got GAA Congress tomorrow. And I'm very happy to say that Declan Bogue of the 42.ie is with us on the line. Declan, how are you doing?
How could you not be well?
Yes, I know. It's a good time of year.
Spring is sprung.
Do you feel completely plugged in and riding the wave of this being, you know, a proper part of the GAA season at this point? Because I'll just caveat that question just by saying that it feels a bit different to previous years when it comes to, say, the National Football League. Because the Championship has sort of fixed itself over the past couple of years, we don't cling to, say, the Division 1 fixtures in the National League in the way we would have done in, you know, 2016, 2017, 2018, certainly during Dublin's period of dominance. Maybe that's just me, and maybe that's a Dublin-specific thing, given, you know, that Croke Park fixture last weekend was a bit of a damp squib. But where does the National Football League sit for you at the moment?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I mean, if you put it back 10 years and 20 years and 30 years, like, if you're, because, I am at that stage, Owen, you may not be. But you put it back 10 years ago, and it was getting to be a little bit, especially when Jim Galvin decided to go after the league as well as Championship, then it became somewhat of a foregone conclusion. It was always enough there to keep you interested. I don't know, I find it year on year that there's more focus on it. Anyway, the more focus goes on something, the more important it feels, well, it is important. But also the fact is that it is so close now to Championship, and that it's also, everything is concertina in. It's not like the way it used to be. It's, I mean, when you think about this evolution of the National Leagues to a game in October, a game in November, and then maybe a game again in February, right? I mean, it was absolute crazy, like, that stuff. And even if you look back on scorelines and stuff like that, and teams that were out, you know, it was such an odd way to run a competition, like, that you would have basically two games across 4 months, and then you'd actually get down to the main nitty-gritty, which again would be once a fortnight, like, kind of thing. To be in then it was streamlined then, and then in 2008 then it became sort of structured into Division 1, 3, 3 and 4. And from that, it is gone and grown in importance and all the rest. And now, because it's so close to the Championship, there is no element. And because the club month, as we used to call it, in April is gone now, it's not about peaking. It's literally about getting to a certain level for a weekend in January, and you're hoping you sustain that. There's no topping up. The work needs to be done all there, and you're hoping that sustains you all the way through to the last weekend in July. Sorry, June, of course.
Yes. Yes, because it's kind of hard to know, because there's clearly so much of it that's more important than previous. Like the Division 2, 3 scenario with regards to your status in Sam Maguire is a higher level of importance. What's at stake there compared to anything we've ever seen in the National League in recent years? And maybe we just need to kind of plug ourselves out of Division 1 a little bit more. But that being said, I mean, you're looking at this weekend's fixtures, and if Dublin lose to the Rossies, you're kind of thinking to yourself, geez, they're going to be in a bit of relegation trouble, and that's as glamorous a story as you can get in Gaelic football.
Yeah, there's some good lines, and you can say that. But I'll tell you, living up here in Tyrone, as you know, you and I have spent a bit of time up here and spoke to the locals. There's a lot of people that are wondering that, you know, will we have the talent to actually win the Tailteann Cup if we end up in there? So it's there's storylines everywhere, and there's fascinations everywhere. Of course, Dublin is bound to be a massive fascination. I think what people are discovering now is like that Gerry Brennan gave an addition to, I think it was something in the region of 130 footballers that got runs out, you know, in the regional trial period, and it's just come back to basically this is the plan that we had before. No major changes with these, the people we know we can rely on. But they just, whatever way you dress it up, they do not have the same team as before. And, you know, you would imagine that he could do with just literally camping out on Brian Fenton's front garden, begging him to come back, because that would make a difference. But also, like, you know, you just wonder, someone like a Paul Mannion that was raced lightly enough throughout his career. Like, you know, he had years out here. Didn't he go to the Far East for work at times for two seasons? He skipped out then prior to Desi taking it. I always wondered, like, you know, a 2 point mark, someone like Paul Mannion, like, got an enormous boot on him. Like, you know, with two additions of two players, Dublin would be transformed right now. They just look like they're in a real state of panic, don't they?
Yeah.
Notwithstanding what you know, what's happening in Division 2 with the exciting football that the Cork's producing, or else, like, you know, the ability of Meath to kick these two-pointers is... I don't know. I just think that it has never been more interesting. I think that, you know, at this stage it should be more cynical and say it's the league's league. But I actually find it far more interesting now as the years go on.
Yeah, you're talking me into it here, Declan. And like the point on the Dubs, it's tempting to suggest that Brian Fenton and Paul Mannion would thrive in the new rules. And that is undoubtedly true, but I think we kind of forget just how much they thrived in the old rules, given they're two of the greatest players of their generation.
So I agree. But I will say this, like, I mean, I think there was a stat, and I could be wrong here, but I think in the last 3 years of Brian Fenton's inter-county career, he only won 4 kickouts in the air, like, you know, above his head. And I just think, well, there's two ways of looking at it. Like, would you like to be the hero who wins 5 kickouts over his head per half? Like, and that would look spectacular on this. Or do you want to be the fella who's slightly, not slightly, but has peaked and is on the way down, and you've got what Kieran McGinney calls piggery? Like, so you're standing under a dropping ball, and the next thing you know, there's a 20-year-old who has absolutely left a dead leg on you, like, you know, and you're expected to jump up straight up into the air. I don't.
Yeah, like the piggery point and where that is, like, do we think in an alternate universe the peak Dublin team would have had the piggery about them to win All-Irelands in this era? Because it was a very different way in which they controlled their 6 in a row, in particular, the sort of sterilisation of a lot of the football they played, largely because they were so much better than everybody they played, that the games felt like they didn't really have a whole pile about them, because Dublin just had so much control as well as being so much better. But you never really associate that great Dublin team with, say, that great Tyrone team of the 2000s, when you had the likes of Brian Duher, or the Kerry team of the same era with Paul Galvin, who would have definitely been people who would have been held up in the piggery conversation for and thriving and winning All-Stars as a result of their greatness in the piggery stakes. I do wonder how well that Dublin era would have got on here. And look, a lot of those half-forwards are still playing the game. Like, Howard's still there, Scully's still there.
Mm-hmm. Though, like, it's a great point you make, right? And it is, even though Dublin have to be acknowledged for what they did, 6 in a row, like, that's the greatest team, right? That's the greatest ever team.
Yeah.
But are they as loved as a team that might have won 2 in 3 years, like, you know, or widely admired, like those two teams you talk about, the Tyrone and the Kerry, or even Armagh of 2002 that came like a comment, like, or the Galway teams just a couple of years before that, like, you know, they had a very scientific, if you want to use that expression, way of working the ball into around the D and shooting from in front of the post. Like, and Dean Rock was normally one of those that was coming around the loop. But they were also extremely cynical and cute And they were unbelievable at setting up basketball type screens where fella carries a ball, carries into contact, offloads just before the point of contact, and then, you know, steps across the body of the person who is intended to make the first tackle, so they cannot make the second tackle on the person who's after receiving the ball, right? So all these things that they had, and people say that these rules were changed to suit Kerry, but like it's a point not really noticed that even though Jim Galvin's chairing these meetings, I wonder, a penny for his thoughts, would his Dublin team have thrived with the new rules? Because they certainly weren't kicking, you know, they were kicking two points, if you want to call that, against Donegal in 2014 in the All Ireland semi final. Paul Flynn was nailing them, like all these.
Donegal's attitude.
Yeah, Donegal's attitude that day was let them kick them. If they beat us by kicking single points from out that far, then good luck to them. But that luck runs out, or that special energy you have at the start of the game, it does, you hit a lull in your energy. All of a sudden, then you're not kicking them, and your energy deflates, your confidence deflates. And that's what Donegal were banking on then, hitting teams in the counter the way they did. And then after that, Gavin said, right, okay, we're not going to get caught again in that. We keep our six men back, and we've got a sweeper, and we will just work a way of carrying the ball into the D, get a man on the loop, and kick a simple point. But it doesn't suit now, because you can only get so far. You just simply, I don't know what the stats are, but you're going to have to actually say, well, you know, what was up to 38% of the total amount of scores was accounted for by two-pointers last season? I would expect that to climb.
Yes.
You look at Mayo last week, and I know you see a bit of a gale behind Fergal Boland. You see it's two-pointers. I mean, the second one just on the buzzer was from 52 metres.
Yeah.
Sorry, long. Like, you know, this is the thing that teams, it's not that they have to be aware of. Like, and obviously, like, you know, Mayo didn't seem to take any notice of it. Tyrone maybe don't have the distance kickers to do it. But, like, the teams that win the All Ireland come close to the teams who are going to kick a phenomenal number of two-pointers.
Not to linger on the Dublin point too much, but it just kind of got me thinking here about their current situation. And it's worth stating that we don't know how the season's going to pan out for Dublin. There is a chance that Gerard Brennan is still very much figuring things out before things click into gear, and winning Leinster is just another formality for them once again this season. I will say, though, at the moment, the general consensus and my own opinion would be that Leinster is very much up for grabs, and this Dublin team are continuing to look vulnerable. Part of his task now, it seems, is to try and rediscover the spontaneity within Dublin football. Like, I've no question that if Jim Gavin was coming along now as Dublin manager and that Donegal game happened now within the new rules, he would have found a way for Dublin to win a couple of All-Irelands or to get the best version out of themselves within this current rules. However, the greatest era in the history of any Gaelic football team ever came playing in such a style that had to have had a drip down effect onto all the other Dublin teams, the entire county. This is how you play football, because this is how our senior team is playing. It has to have had such a big impact on how all the underage teams and even club teams were playing in the county. So it's a big old task to interrupt that and change the culture essentially of what Dublin football represents. It may not have been the scintillating style always, certainly the closer we got to COVID, but it was a very effective style and a very effective and understandable culture that they had sort of brought to proceedings with their senior men's team.
Yeah, it's a great point. And to be honest, you and I, Owen, like, will not lose too much sleep. Like, they've had enough success and they've got enough resources and they've got countless coaching resources. So if they have to spin the whole thing, like it's like an oil tanker turning in the middle of an ocean, like if they have to spin that, they'll find a way to spin it quick, and then what they come back with will be exciting. But, like, you know, don't cry for me, Argentina. Like, we won six in a row. Like, we're not gonna, you know, not. Don't think there'll be too many lamentations about Dublin if they go away for two, three seasons. Like, you know, You know what? Like, we're talking dangerously here. Like, you know,
we are. That's the thing.
You can see Conor O'Callaghan holding Sam Maguire above his head in July, and you know, we could be left with egg on our faces.
Yeah. What's going on with Tyrone?
I haven't been to see them much. Right. No point telling the lie. It just seems the Padraig Hamsey has been one of the spiritual leaders. He hasn't been there. He's out at the moment, right? Kieran McGeary, I believe, has been travelling on a bit of a break. Others, I don't care what anyone says, losing Peter Hart over the winter was a bad bit of business. That was a bad bit of business. Peter Hart, to me, I know he's been playing since 2009, but Peter Hart could have played for Tyrone until he was 40, because, like, this is a guy who's never drank or smoked. Like, he wouldn't even lick a crisp, like, never mind eat a bag of crisps. Like, I know the lifestyle, he just is an exceptionally clean living, good, better than you and I, kind of guy, right? But, I mean, you know, he came on last year in Ballyofay and won the game. He just said, I'm not going to be beaten by Donegal and Ballyofay here and kick two-pointers at the end. Just pure drama. Like, and then they were playing Kerry and getting stuffed, and they waited for ages and ages before they sent him on. So I don't know what signal that sent out. We're happy enough to lose this game without you on the field, and then we'll give you the last garbage minutes. I mean, I just thought that was, I don't know, like, perhaps he was injured. Perhaps he was far more hampered than we thought. But either way, you don't lose someone like that if you can at all avoid it. Like, and I know that he's a young man and there's a couple of children and he's busy and the wife is a doctor. She's very, very busy. She for all that. All that being said, Peter Hart could have squeezed it. They could have squeezed another year out of Peter Hart as a second half sub. Don't want to talk too much about that because then there's Dara Canavan is going to Australia. So if someone like Dara Canavan wants to go to Australia, you're either your season is a 12-month affair. You're either going to take it out of Errol Kearn or you're going to take it out of Tyrone. And rightly or wrongly, he says, I'm going to take this out of Tyrone rather than Errol Kearn. And that doesn't, from the outside, look promising. That does not look promising at all. You're losing your most dangerous player. You're midfield are not as effective as they have been before. You're turning back to the likes of Frank Burns to offer you some solidity. Like, you have lost in the last number. Now, you lost Conor Minor, who was a sensational footballer. Like, there's absolutely no way. I know he hasn't been himself and he's been injured for the last number of years, but, like, he was one of the... If you're picking a top team to represent Ireland in Gaelic football, Conor Myler, for me, was absolutely on that, absolutely nailed on. And you've lost him. You have lost... you've just lost so many kind of performers. Like, you know, Conor McKinnon was there, went back to AFL. Tiernan McCann, Ronan Elaw, the kind of boys who maybe weren't exactly first named down on the team sheet when they won the All-Ireland, but still were adding serious quality to the training sessions. So now you've got, like, successful under-20s coming through, and some of the lads looked like they might make it. Shea, name escapes me now, from Arbaugh, came on against Mayo in the qualifiers last year. Not there now. Callum Daly was captain of one of those underage teams. Didn't make it through.
Shea McDermott, is it?
No, that's Shea McDermott. Yeah. Errol Kearn. It was a wing-back with a mullet. Who looks sensational against Kerry in the under-20.
Shea O'Hare.
That's the guy, Shea O'Hare, with the mullet. Like, yeah, says me. So there's a bit of patience needed. Niall Devlin, a lot of these boys have come through. They're now, they're betting in and they're getting there. But it just doesn't seem to be exciting. And when I say that, like, the Team Talk is the local sort of website up there, right? And they cover loads of games and they're unbelievably well informed. They will cover every championship game at every level, at every code. And they were having a debate on their podcast there about the game, the last but one game. Who did they play? Let me just look it up. The Tyrone-Cavan game. And they were earnestly debating, was this the smallest Tyrone crowd to see a Tyrone senior game since the early 90s.
Wow.
And bear in mind, like in the early 90s, Tyrone found themselves in Division 4. You know, whatever way they mixed up the divisions, they found themselves in Division 4 for a year. So I don't know. The Tyrone support have become entirely passive about their team. I mean, even those underage teams, like the under-20s team that was winning an All-Ireland in Portlaoise against Kerry, there was virtually nobody other than family and friends for the players at those games. Like, the attendances were so small.
Yeah, just going by the GAA.ie, just over 2,000 spectators were there at Healy Park for that Tyrone Cavan game, which is extraordinarily low.
I have been at Tyrone games in the Kelly Cup where there's been 9,000 people there. You know, we don't, like, the oft-quoted line about the game in the McKenna Cup in Casement Park when there was 18,000 or whatever, like, that was 2006. Like, bear in mind, like, just everything seemed different and fresh back then, and I don't know whether, I don't know the reasons for it, but I do know that, streaming has had an effect on people, like, the ability to just watch a game, like, you know, sit at home with bad weather. I don't know, you know, middle of February there, you were touching on about 40 days solid of rain, like, you know, too. Be interesting to find out an underlying reasons for it, but, like, certainly it doesn't seem to be, it's not the same draw as it used to be in Tyrone.
No, like, and it kind of feels that your point is going to be hammered home over these next three games, or it's going to turn entirely on its head because they still have to play Meath and they still have to play Cork in their last two games after playing Offaly this weekend. So you look at Cork and Meath as the two best teams on form in the division at the moment, and those being two awful fixtures that are still to come for Tyrone. But at the same time, if they win both those games after you would expect they beat Offaly this weekend, then the whole thing turns on its head. But the expectation, yeah, bare minimum would have been promotion, and like if they don't manage to win this weekend, then it's absolutely the other end of the table where they'll be looking, which just seems like an extraordinary outcome.
Well, like, you know, I mean, you can never forget that they got relegated on 7 points, which was just a phenomenal number of points to get relegated on. Like,
well, exactly, but that makes it all the more extraordinary for them to be in the conversation around relegation in Division 2, given where they were at last year. I thought they had a very good championship. Obviously, they kind of bowed out fairly meekly against Kerry on the day, but I thought they were excellent in the Ulster Championship.
Yeah, they were. Like, you know, they were very strong, and they were excellent against Dublin. Like, they completely controlled that game too.
Yeah.
But it's a curious one to keep an eye on. But just wonder, can they turn this around? Like, but the idea, you know, you've got, like, Mark Bradley is not quite there, injured. You've got sort of the second, not the front. You know, even just someone like Owen Michael Holm. People in Tyrone are kind of concerned about players playing out of position. Ronan Cassidy, for example, maybe not household names these, but Ronan Cassidy made his name as a forward, but he's playing the backs. You know, Owen Michael Holm was most effective for Loughborough at centre half forward and coming onto the ball, but he's been stuck in the corner here. Like, and you know, I know that not everyone can play their club position for the county, but just from a way out looking and not being completely privy, it just, everything just seems a bit off right now.
Just want to ask you about Congress this weekend, Declan. The extension of the intercounty season is the big motion on the clore tomorrow. So this motion, if passed, would see the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship final played on or before the second week in August. So kicking it back 2 weeks, and so there'd be a gap week between the hurling final and the football final. And then this would also mean, because the season can't start until the fourth Sunday of the year, pre-season competitions would be ended, in effect. This looks like it's not going to pass at all. This looks like it's going to be defeated fairly soundly, actually, tomorrow. So has there been a movement over the last year where people have kind of got used to the month of August? I think myself, if this was brought in to Congress 12 months ago, it might have had a chance of passing. But I think last year we've all kind of realised, actually, this is grand.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think that this is so... I hear people having impassioned debates about this one. I just don't get it. Like, I mean, push it on for a week, whatever. Like, it's only going to affect two counties. Like, there are obviously laws of unintended consequences, and then you are running into, if you've got Galway or Cork or, you know, a genuine dual county that will have difficulty then running their domestic club competitions. But it does not affect, like, you know, you're going to look at, if Centre Council want it, right, then you know, right, where are the votes coming from? And you're going to get the overseas block, which is a pretty significant one. But you are also, if you know, by the unintended consequences that I talk about, right, so you've got your dual counties who won't go for it because they feel that, you know, the club cannot be squeezed more than what it is, and it is pretty squeezed right now. But you've also got the provincial councils that value the pre-season, most especially Ulster, like, you know, there's a lot of money to be made that way, and they will not vote for anything, because then that would mean then that they they're not able then to host like the McKenna Cup. So, you know, look, I mean, you can debate around it all day long, it's just not going to go through.
Yeah.
I was hoping you were going to ask me about my home club, Tabo Maguire's and Fermanagh, that are putting through a motion. Rather interesting one, to be honest, because I think, like, the most of the media attention has gone on that, the move in the finals, and the other one being the one were brought by Clontarf, Dr. Noah McCaffrey, whereby players would need to play a minimum of 8 games in order to be eligible for the following year's senior intercounty championship. Now, that's not going to work either. Like, I mean, you know, you're basically forcing players, you have to play this, like, or, you know, what about a player that travels? What about a player that's injured? I know there would be caveats, but, like, you would be getting into the ream of a 300-page document, like, to list all the various caveats that would be required in that. It sounds great because, oh, give the clubs back their players. Of course, nobody's arguing that. There should be a better mechanism for that. Some clubs and some counties, they play away like mad. Others simply don't. Like, I think Johnny Cooper said he played something like 4 games in 3 years with his club, because of the nature of their run and then the Fianna's run, like, or whatever, whoever they got in the championship. But the one I'm talking about, Temple, right, is to restore the minor football championship final to as the curtain raiser to the All Ireland final.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm all for, and I'll tell you why. It's all a bit of nothing. Everything is a little bit tedious right now, as you have everyone entering the stadium in All Ireland final day all at once, pushing in, and nobody is really that going and watching the Stunning or Gavin James or whoever it is, like, you know, in almost an entirely empty stadium.
Or the Jubilee team.
The Jubilee team's not being respected. I mean, the only reason that anyone wanted to see the Jubilee team this year was to see if a certain former hurler was doing or not. And, like, you know, it's like, you recall 2 years ago they had the centenary of the Tailteann Games, and they had a race, the mile race around Croke Park at halftime.
Oh, yeah.
Or Limerick game, right?
That was great.
The excitement that generated.
Yeah, that was class.
It was brilliant. And, like, the record, because I've been writing about it, the record was held by Tom O'Riordan, right? Ian of the Irish Times father, right? So a former Olympian, Tom O'Riordan, held the record for 4 minutes, 12 seconds back in 1966. So that was the record. And the record was only beaten by less than 2 seconds. So, like, you know, you go from 1966 to 2024, and less than 2 seconds was shaved off that time with all the running technology and sports science that you have. And I just find that incredible, like, you know.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe we've been thinking about halftime shows at All-Ireland Final Day is completely wrong. Like, we've completely associated it with what the NFL do in terms of getting a musical act. We should put in some sort of gladiatorial sport.
It just doesn't work. Like, I mean, it's some middle of the road performer. Put the Stunning on in the Vicar Street, put Melda May on, and fantastic, brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like, enjoy them for what they are, but they are completely out of it. Like, it's you've got people out in the street, and you've got some people in the concourse, and there might be a handful of people in their seats, but they're not paying attention. I mean, they try to do this on pitch show and no harm to any of the people involved. They're doing what they're asked to. But like, they're talking about the game coming up ahead, and who cares at that point? Like, Jesus Christ, these are people who've been on like 300 podcasts that very week, talking about every conceivable outcome of the game, and all of a sudden they're standing by the side of the pitch. They must be exhausted, like talking about who's going to win the middle third.
But nothing will get the juices flowing of half the fan base as one of the O'Shea's saying, "I think Kerry, you're going to do it." That is the key piece of pre-match entertainment that people want.
Or one of those shows maybe wincing and saying, "You know, I'd be worried for this one now." I'd be worried. Obviously the counter argument to all that is, okay, Miners, which was said before, Miners has gone to under 17. It's too young. It's too much pressure. That's nonsense.
Nonsense, yeah.
And also too, like, most counties have gone back to under 18 for their minors. Like, you know, there's no real conceivable excuse apart from someone talking, you know, but there's talk of leaving certain stuff like that. Maybe I think they have created.
It's tickets. It's tickets, Declan. That's the main argument.
Yeah, and
this.
You could have an awfully hurlers that all of a sudden is a cash cow. Like, you know, for two, three seasons, they were an amazing story. By and large, though, I don't know. You could have the Touch and Cup as the curtain raiser to the All-Ireland football final, because the tickets are all over the show there anyway, and the Joe McDonough for the All-Ireland hurling final.
When you say tickets are all over the show, as in like they're very easy to get for
Touch and Cup final? They're distributed all throughout the country anyway, like, you know.
Yeah, I dare say that the Talton Cup will become a golden ticket if it is the curtain raiser to the Sam Maguire final.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
So we'll see how that one passes, if it passes, I should say, tomorrow. A couple of brilliant tangents there, Declan. Great to chat to you. We didn't even get you on our Donegal against Galway, which could be a cracker this weekend, but I'm sure we'll catch you on the other side and get your take on those two counties at some stage before the league is over. Declan Bowe, appreciate your time.
All right, thank you.
Cheers.
All the best.
We'll take a quick break and we're continuing our build-up to Bowes versus Rovers right after these.
Gaelic football on Off the Ball.
In partnership with AIB. Proud supporters of the AIB All-Ireland Club Championships. Because we believe support is what gets you the life you're truly after.
Football on Off the Ball.
There is an unpredictability about it. I mean, if there was a predictability about it, we'd all be drinking caipirinhas and daiquiris, as Pep suggested, but on Copacabana Beach, having just sort of taken the bookies to the cleaners.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.